Hi, I'm Jeff Johnston, host of the Living Undeterred podcast, and today I'm excited to have a special guest for me. I'm not really sure where this conversation is going to go today. I promised him that we'd leave it open-ended, but heading into a new year, or this will probably play during the new year, I thought it'd be good to kick off and just talk a little bit about our story again, about why we do what we do and kind of what Living Undeterred means and the Brighton Initiative and all these other things that have occurred since our lives took a big detour years ago. But without further ado, my son Ian is here. So Ian, thanks for being here.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
When I was thinking about having you on, I know you've been here before. Canyon Head is leaving Legacy Podcast. And we talked a lot about your story with, obviously, we're going to cover that a little bit today, but and also you came in with Zach and talked about Tribute Kicks and your business there. But I thought maybe we could just start off about what's it like to be a young entrepreneur today. Tribute Kicks is a store that you and Zach started. And then from there, we can talk about a little bit like the why behind you, not just the fun part of selling shoes, but kind of the purpose behind it. We can talk about that, but maybe just start off with your first shoe experience back in high school when you were selling out of the trunk of your car and kind of how you envisioned it to play out. And how's it going so far running your own business?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty fun, pretty exciting, you know, especially with the holidays. I mean, what, from today we have about 8 days till Christmas. So it's, you know, starting to get pretty busy. Just had Black Friday a few weeks ago. And, you know, that's always the best day of the year, especially for us because we're in a pretty big mall. So that typically helps with a lot of people coming in for Black Friday deals. But yeah, I started myself selling probably, I don't know, like 5-6 years ago, just, you know, by myself. I really got into like when like the Yeezys came out, that's like was like my first really big hype shoe. I really got myself into that. And I really liked like the whole culture behind it and then kind of just got behind it then. And then started selling and end of high school kind of, and then kind of transitioned into college a little bit. And then yeah. And I think it was December of 2022. I basically reached out to Zach. He was another seller in the area. And we just said, hey, you know, this has kind of been a thing that, you know, we wanted to do was to create a store and kind of came together and did that.
What's been the hardest part of being a young entrepreneur today?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of challenges currently. I mean, obviously, with like the whole overall market with everything. I mean, the shoe market, I wouldn't say overall is down, but, you know, a lot of the shoes that, you know, we were selling at X price were now selling a lot lower. You know, it's just a new wave we got to adjust to and, you know, still doing it.
Do you see a particular type of shoe that does really well right now? Like, I know I grew up with Converse and those type of shoes. You don't see those as much anymore. And it's mostly what, Jordans and...
I would say mostly the Jordans, like the Jordan Retros are like our hottest movers. It's just not really, you know, you can't really find a lot of those like Jordans sitting anywhere else, you know, so that's why, you know, we opened our store and kind of do what we do. But I'd say another one would be like Yeezys, obviously, with, you know, all that stuff going on, that whole controversy with Kanye West and Adidas and them breaking apart. It's been a big controversy, but the shoes are still selling. A lot of people don't agree with him or with that kind of thing, but
well, scandal creates a lot of excitement too.
Yeah.
So,
and they're still selling, you know, and you can't walk into any store anywhere and find Yeezys. They're non-existent really at the moment. So
they're the most comfortable shoe. I love them. Yeah. I mean, I wear them and they're durable. I've been wearing mine for 2 years and they don't look brand new, but they definitely hold their own.
Yeah. 100%.
So in regards to the market, we talked about that. I've been around the block a long time. I know there's lots of cycles and stuff. Where do you see the shoe industry right now? Do you see it as kind of peaking a little bit, or do you see a lot of potential? Do you think maybe there's, the rest coming into 2026? Are there new opportunities, new drops coming? And maybe also to talk about what a drop is. I hear you guys talk so much jargon in this space and what is a shoe drop? Why is it important? And, what do you think is going to be kind of the trends going in the next year?
Yeah, I mean, the market's kind of at a weird time right now. I mean, Nike has been re-releasing a lot of shoes in the past few years. So, you know, a lot of people get excited about that. Like this week or about a week ago, they dropped it's called the Jordan 11 Gamma. It came back out in, I think, 2012 is when it initially released. they just restocked them. And, you know, we've gotten 20 plus phone calls a day asking for this one specific shoe, you know, just because, you know, it's the hottest shoe right now on the market. Jordan 4 Black Cat's another one that released in 2020. And now they just restocked it like 2 weeks ago. And, you know, everyone's asking about that shoe. So, you know, they just have like a kind of a cycle where they'll wait like 5-6 years and then kind of restock a shoe. And then, you know, everyone goes crazy for it. But the overall market's kind of, I don't know, maybe kind of close to its peak, maybe if not past it a little bit. Because like I said, with the Yeezys especially, I mean, that was the number one shoe.
But people are, they're always going to need shoes.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're always going to need shoes. It's just maybe, you know, not spending, you know, thousands of dollars on a pair of shoes, maybe a couple hundred, maybe a hundred. But let me just pull my phone quick.
Like what you guys did, which was smart, is you guys made a little bit of a pivot. So like in the store, Tribute Kicks is at Coral Ridge Mall here in Iowa City. You guys started selling vintage clothes, and that's really taken off. And it's kind of neat to see a business that pretty much opened up just with shoes. And then in a couple of years, you guys, you know, half your sales are vintage clothes, and some really cool old jerseys and jackets come in. Mm-hmm. So maybe you talk a little bit about where you think the vintage market has been. And also, how do you guys find your vintage products? I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, our vintage definitely is some of our best selling items. It's, you know, especially that's a very, you know, popular thing right now, especially to like college students because it's more affordable.
And how old is vintage normally? Would it have to be like 20 years or something?
I would
something,
say, yeah, probably anywhere between 10, 15 years older. I mean, okay. We have some stuff. We have some like Iowa gear from like the 1980s in there, 1990s, yeah. Just like, you know, a lot of the older Iowa football stuff. We got a few like Letterman jackets and stuff, and a lot of people, you know, geared towards that. But yeah, especially we just did a big Carhartt drop this week on Saturday. And, you know, we had a lot of people interested about it, had a big traction with all that stuff. And, you know, a lot of people showed up for that. And they're just, you know, Carhartt jackets. And, you know, a lot of people really love the vintage stuff right now. We have a guy who sources all of our stuff for us, all the vintage stuff. He does a phenomenal job, goes to like different houses, or you can go to like, what do they call the estate sales and stuff. Goodwill, that's another very popular place. And just like Facebook Marketplace, and just, you know, finds a lot of really good deals.
And you guys
deals.
Buy, which is kind of unique. You buy vintage too, right? Mm-hmm. So people could come in. And I've been down there a lot watching you guys kind of wheel and deal. And it's not uncommon to see days where you see 3 or 4 or 5 people coming in with, you know, 5, 10, 15 pairs of shoes.
Yeah.
You know, trying to flip them. And you guys, you know, you guys have to have your markups and all that. But
sure.
Do you see that as a kind of a competitive advantage you guys have over maybe some of the other shoe places in the malls or around town?
Yeah. I mean, we're obviously the only place who buy shoes in the mall. There's a few other stores kind of in the area that is obviously, you know, there are competitors, you know, but we keep very close contact with them. And, you know, we talk to them a lot, and, you know, they're our competitors, but, you know, we still talk to them a lot. But yeah, like with buying the shoes in the mall, you know, people come in almost every day. We buy, you know, a lot of shoes almost, especially on the weekends. You know, people mm-hmm. come in, especially around now with the holidays, people come in looking for cash and stuff. And, you know, we're a good spot. You know, if you want to sell your shoes, you know, you sell them to us and we'll give you cash.
Crazy to watch you guys when people come in. You guys seem to know so much story and history about every shoe. Like mm-hmm. these I'm wearing right here. What's the story behind these?
That's just called the Jordan 4 Military Black is just the name of it. Yeah. But here, I was going to show you. So speaking about the drops and stuff, there's a drop coming out on, what day is this? December 20th. This is the Jordan 8. It's called the Bugs Bunny.
Show it over there, the camera, if they can see it. Oh, that one there.
Jordan 8 Bugs Bunny. This shoe came out, I don't remember exactly when it first came out, but you know, that's another one that's restocking. Jordan 8s are pretty popular. It's just like, so that's kind of a shoe drop. It's called the app Sneakers. This is where, you know, you go for all these big drops for all these shoes and stuff. And you basically can just enter in all your information. And then, you know, it's just kind of like a raffle system.
And then if you win, you just pay and then you get them for retail.
If you win, you get them for retail. If you don't, then, you know, you gotta.
Yeah.
Oh God, is that better?
So that's just better? Hold it up and don't say anything. They can zoom in and edit it in.
Do you want me to kind of repeat that or?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is an app that we use. It's called Sneakers. Basically, this is the Jordan 8 Bugs Bunny. This released a few years ago. And now, you know, it's kind of coming back out. Like I said, with the other shoes, like with the Gammas and the Black Cats, basically you can just enter in all your information down here And then it's kind of just like a raffle system where, you know, if you win, you win the shoe for retail. If you don't, then, you know, you have to pay a little bit extra. But that's an app that we use. There's like Nike, all these other apps with different drops and stuff, like Kobe's drop on there. That's where we try to go for, you know, a lot of the shoes for retail.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't have you kind of talk a little bit about the meaning behind Tribute Kicks. I mean, kicks, obviously, we know what that means. But Tribute has a special meaning, obviously, for our family, but for you. Maybe just explain a little bit where that came from and share a little bit about what happened to you in your when you were growing up.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, Tribute is the meaning that we do. We donate a percentage of our profits each month to some sort of like mental health organization or substance abuse area. We've done many in Cedar Rapids and around the whole Iowa area. But yeah, like basically just because of our story, you know, obviously I lost my mom, I lost my brother, and, you know, it's just a very deep meaning to me. And then with Zach, you know, we each have our own story. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why we did
that.
You know,
you were 15 when your older brother died from fentanyl. And that was the end of a long, very difficult experience for Seth that struggled with addiction, substance abuse. And then after he passed, my wife, your mom, obviously bearing a child is, you know, you don't wish that upon your worst enemy. And everyone deals with it differently. And for her, it was very difficult for her to come back from that. And mm-hmm. so we lost her too, coming up on, this will be the fifth Christmas without mom and the ninth mm-hmm. without your brother. Mm-hmm. So Tribute has a special meaning to us. So every shoe, every item that we sell at the store, and I say we because I'm a minority owner, but you know, we want to be intentional about, but I wanted to be intentional about you and Zach when you guys do well to make sure that you give back to the community, because mm-hmm. without the community, you can't sell anything. Yeah. So there is a very good relationship there. Kind of a yin and yang that you take care of the community, they take care of you. So you guys have done the Coralville Food Bank.
Yeah, we typically do that every November.
Zach Johnson Foundation.
Yeah, typically every November we'll do something with some sort of canned food drive. You know, that'll be good for Thanksgiving. And then December, we either just try to do kind of the same thing or some sort of like toy drive or just something where we donate, you know, to something for Christmas or, you know, something like that just to, you know, help the less fortunate.
Well, I think it's a great, it's great for other young entrepreneurs to see that there's a lot more than just driving a Lamborghini or going on TikTok and flashing a wad mm-hmm. of hundreds. And just all that does is gaslight and make other people feel inferior. And you guys are on the other side. You're trying to bring people up.
Yeah.
And I, as your dad, have benefited watching you guys do that too. And it's been tough. I mean, being an owner of a business in a mall, obviously expenses are high being in a mall. You get lots of foot traffic, but
you pay for
you pay for it, but
pay for the foot traffic.
Yeah. You guys are learning on the fly. And I think, you're becoming a little bit leaner, a little bit better with your money. But I did want to spend a lot of time today talking about, what happened in our family. But I think, you know, obviously people know that I do a lot with mental health advocacy, and our app Brighton is dedicated, obviously the name of Seth's daughter, but is dedicated for human flourishing to improve the lives of people using our app. But, maybe share just briefly that day when you found out that your brother had died and, what your relationship was with Seth and, you know, 9 years later, kind of how you are living an inspired life, you know, and trying not to hang on too much, but at the same time, we don't want to forget about him either.
Yeah, no, for sure. I believe I was, he was 8 years older than me. If that sounds
right. You were 15. Yep.
Yeah. So 8 years older. So yeah, that day, I mean, it was Districts up in Cedar Falls.
Districts golf.
Golf for Districts at Pheasant Ridge. And, yeah, I mean, my dad never really missed any tournaments ever. And, you know, I showed up and stuff and, you know, I could kind of tell something was wrong because I rode in the team van. Mm-hmm. So, and you rode in your own car. So we obviously didn't come up together. And then, yeah, after I saw you know, obviously something wasn't right. And I noticed that when you left that, you know, he never misses any tournaments. I was kind of wondering that whole round, kind of, you know, what's going on. And, you know, that was obviously in the back of my head. And then, yeah, we end up missing state, I believe, by one stroke mm-hmm. or something like that. It was very close, whatever our margin was. But And then, you know, I didn't see you for a while. I tried texting you. You didn't respond and calling you nothing. And finally come home and, you know, you and mom are sitting on the couch and stuff. And I remember sitting there and then, you know, Roman's obviously next to me. And
your brother was 13 at the time.
Yeah. Roman was 2 years younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote about this in my book, and obviously people that follow me know the whole story, but just to go back that moment in time when I was taking you to the bus barn at Prairie, and you were a sophomore, and Prairie had very high hopes to make state. We had never made state before. And Coach Columbus thought this was kind of be the year, you know? And so mom was back home kind of getting ready, putting on her Prairie outfit and stuff. And I'm dropping you off. And then the phone rings, it's like 6:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of sense that this was going to be a difficult call because we had them before, but I didn't anticipate that I was going to answer the phone and then find out that, you know, Seth was dead. And all I remember is you were right in front of me, and I had the split second decision. Like, do I say anything? Which is obviously the end of your tournament. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're done. You're the number one golfer. Team was really leading, hoping that you guys, you know, this was a good team. You had some seniors that were really excited. Mm-hmm. And I had this split second decision. It's like, Seth's not coming back. I can say what I want to say, and he's gone. Do I want to impede on your day? Do I want to really, and the other kids and the parents and the coaches, and it's really not fair to the whole team. Mm-hmm. It really didn't have anything to do with what happened. So I just made that split decision that I wasn't going to tell you. And I'm really happy I didn't.
Yeah.
You went off to the tournament and you ended up double bogeying the last hole, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Prairie lost by one shot. And I remember you coming home and you were just devastated because you were like, you know, I let the team down, Dad. And, you know, all I had to do was par the hole and we go to state for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And I remember just saying to you and your brother, and I just said, you know, I have a lot worse news than your double bogey, and you guys could kind of sense it.
Yeah.
And then I remember telling you guys, and I tried to frame it in a context that, you know, we really only have two choices. And this is really where I think my whole advocacy started, was born on that idea of the two roads. The idea of two roads is like, you know, you can either just become an alcoholic or addict or take your own life and kind of go down that road of so many people do, or you can use this as a road of inspiration and motivation, not just for yourself, but for other people. And I challenged you and Roman that day that I was going to do that. And I wanted you guys to follow me. And that's kind of how I presented it. And man, you guys really did. I still am just amazed at what you and your little brother, well, he's not little now, but what you and your little brother had done since that day. And how you just turned, you know, just literally the most horrible news that you could possibly get. I mean, losing a sibling is more traumatic to a young adult than losing a parent. Losing a brother or sister is more traumatic for an adolescent. And I found that out when I wrote my book. And so what you've done, Ian, out of it, and, you know, I'll give a little bragging rights here for Ian. So the next year, Prairie had districts at the same golf course, which, first of all, never happens. And I thought, when the districts came out, Ian's junior year, I'm like, oh, God, not Prairie. This is like, this is where it all started. You know, this is, Seth died in Waterloo, literally like 2 miles from the golf course. Yeah. I mean, it was just really, just really amazing synchronicities involved here. And so I was so nervous, because Channel 9 and Channel 2 knew about your fundraising. Because that year between Seth's death and districts, you had raised like $25,000 during golf.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to go up there and be dad. You know, I'm hyper dad anyway. And every time you miss a putt, I'm like, oh, you know. And so I'm like, no, I'm just going to stay home. I'm going to stay home, let you go up there. I'm going to be too stressed to watch you golf. And I didn't feel like it was fair with all the pressure. So I stayed home, and it was the most torturous. I remember just all day just pacing in my living room going, oh my God, I wonder how he's doing. And I fell asleep.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the phone rings. And I tell you, man, I get choked up. But it was a picture of like the Prairie State banner, you know, and you and Coach Columbus holding it. And I'm like, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is the same hole that you double bogeyed on, you made an 18-foot snake above the hole putt for birdie, and you made it. You made the putt.
Yeah.
You know, later.
We won by one.
It literally gives me goosebumps to think that as much as the universe or your source or God, however you want to play this card, took from us, took our Seth, and then the year later provides us with this just, I can't put it into words.
Yeah, like I said, I think that video is out there somewhere.
Yeah, I have the three pictures in the book I wrote of you putting your putter up in the air, and you're basically saying, this one's for you. And that's became the name of the book. But it just goes to show that even in the worst possible moments of our lives, there are poetic and beautiful things that can happen, but you have to be receptive to it. You know, you could have quit golf. You could have went down the road of drinking, but you didn't. You stuck it out. You raised money. You showed up that day. I'm sure you were stressed.
Yeah.
And you probably didn't understand the implications when you had that birdie putt. You just wanted to make it.
Yeah.
And you made it. And, you know, it's kind of like the rest is history. You know, we made state, and then that next year you win that national award through the AJGA, and then CBS Sports comes out to our house and does an interview with you. And that's kind of where I thought, okay, this is a place where I like advocacy. I like helping people. So for me, Living Undeterred, Brighton, all that really came from your resiliency. Mm-hmm. And then your little brother, Roman, you know, he attributed a lot of his wrestling. He made lots of commitments to Seth. And, you know, Roman had a little bit tougher road because I think early on his relationship with mom was stronger and come more complicated.
Yeah.
Because I kind of taken, wrestling. I took you under the wing for golf, and Prudence did your Roman's wrestling. We couldn't really do both.
Yeah.
And so I think when mom passed too, that was an extra weight, obviously, on you too. But I don't know. I'm just amazed at what you two have done. And you know, the fight's far from over.
Yeah.
You guys have seen 2025 was the hardest year of my life by far. And people think, how can that be harder than the years that your family passed? And I'm like, well, I still had the weight of all that. Plus I had other things happening in my life that made it complicated. But, so I guess it just goes to show that, you know, everybody watching this, everybody listening to this has some challenge going on in their life. It doesn't have to always be death. It could be losing a job. It could be bankruptcy or divorce, or, you know, you don't get to that college that you wanted to apply for, but you know, there's a reason why these things happen. And sometimes that reason isn't clear. And sometimes you have to just go out and make the reason. You know, I'm not a super big believer in the saying things happen for a reason. I think sometimes things just happen and then you have to figure out what that reason is. And for me, it was advocacy. And so people ask why I do what I do. And I thought it was important that we just spend a little bit of time framing the foundation of everything else. So I know we'll change the topic now and not talk about that. But I know going back to shoes, that there's the new thing that you're kind of interested in, and that would be Pokemon.
Sports cards. Yeah, just cards in general.
Yeah, and that started because in my garage a few years ago, I came across my old card collection, and I had them in boxes for, you know, since I was younger than you. And I started going through them and then found some cards, and all of a sudden there's websites and you can type in, you know, I used to get the Beckett magazines, you know, and you had to look up the cards because it came out once a month, and it wasn't the industry there is today. And so I started really getting into cards, just kind of, you know, reimagining my youth. And then, you know, you got to the age where I started kind of bringing you into sports cards, and Seth had a lot of cards too.
I was going
to
mention that. Yeah. So yeah, when we were both younger, I know we bought a lot of like Pokemon cards and stuff. That's why I've been getting into it, honestly, is because of that, you know.
Yeah.
I unlocked, you know, a lot of memories of, you know, Seth and I going to Target and buying the Pokemon tins and stuff and packs and stuff, or Walmart or something like that. You know, we'd open them and stuff, you know, that has a very, you know, deep connection to me now that I kind of unlocked because of that. And, you know, I remember he had binders and just giant tubs of all the older cards, first generation, all that stuff. I mean, it's just insane, you know, what that collection was. And, you know, now I can kind of revisit that, you know, kind of by, you know, opening packs myself. So.
And it's crazy to watch that industry blow up. It's
insane.
Yeah. It's not just the sports cards, but the Pokemon.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to Target, and I didn't know this because I never was into cards for a long time, but they have an area for cards. And I think, what do they call it? A drop again, like in shoes?
Restock.
A restock. Yeah. Well, explain what a restock is. And you go to Target and they have a restock. There's like lines of people waiting. Yeah. It's like insane.
It's basically just whenever, you know, the people who ship stuff to Target, like the suppliers, whenever they get it in, and then they kind of just, you know, obviously just restock everything.
And how do you know about these restocks in advance?
I don't know any.
Does Target publish them?
No, they don't. But I know some people like specifically have like Discords and stuff. Like
they track
the drops, and it's insane what they can do. But I basically just show up whenever, and like, they have stuff, they don't, and that's fine too. But yeah, I've, you know, caught a few restocks just accidentally, random time, random day, walk in there, and you know, the guy has a giant cardboard box and he's just throwing them up on the shelves, and then, you know, you basically have to wait until he's done, and then, you know, there's a big line formed, and now they have
Target
limits.
Target has limits of two, right?
Now there's only limits and stuff, and yeah, you can't buy them everything out, and yeah, it's just crazy.
So what's your best Pokemon card?
I think the best Pokemon card I probably have currently, it's not worth a ton. It's from the new, it's called Mega Evolutions. It's the new kind of like series that came out. Yeah. It's a Mega Lucario is the name of it. And that's probably like a $220 card itself. Obviously, you know, it's a lot of money for a piece of cardboard, but there's some cards out there that are, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. I think the most expensive card ever sold was like over, you know, a million for a Pokemon card. It was like a 1999 Charizard or something like that. It's just insane.
What's the best sports card you and I've ever pulled? It's a funny story because I'll set this up. So yeah. I was going to Target buying these little boxes, and I happened to get a Wemby card or Wemby rookie.
Victor
What's it
Wembanyama.
Called?
Yeah. It's just, it's like a, I don't know the exact name, but it looks like a cartoon.
Yeah.
Like Wemby
like
is a
cartoon
character. Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it was like a, how much was it?
Probably about $1,000
card. $1,000
card
that
probably
I drew out of $29 box at Target. Well, we decided to take it to a sports card place in town here. The name, go ahead and say it.
Cooley's.
Yeah, Cooley's. That's where we go get our cards. They do a great job there, by the way. Little shameless plug for them. And we decided reluctantly to trade it in. It's like, we'll trade it in.
Yeah, because, you know,
we
obviously
got like 70% value. So it's like, you know, we could go to eBay and probably squeeze a couple hundred out of it or trade it in with this group of guys in town that we want to support. And so finish the rest of the story.
Honestly, you know, it's Wemby. It's hard to sell him. I mean, especially with, you know, how good he is and how good, you know, his projections are. But yeah, basically.
And this was a rookie Wemby.
Yeah, both. Yeah, that one was. And then, yeah, I went to Cooley's, traded it in, bought a box of the, I think it's 2023 Topps Royalty.
How many cards are in a box?
I think it's only 8 cards.
Yeah.
And it was a $500 box.
Yeah, so, but we traded in the card for pretty much.
Yeah, that basically one card. Yeah. I think we traded for that and then a bunch of other stuff. Yeah. But that Topps, I think it's Topps Royalty.
Yeah.
Yeah, only 8 cards. I think it's like 5 guaranteed autographs in there. So, you know, you
now
get,
you have to realize, Ian and I do a lot of these, they call them rips, you know, we buy. Yeah. And we also watch the TikToks where everyone you see, they're drawing these great cards. And we're like, we're not ever getting anything great. It's like, this is kind of a racket. Well, then we did happen to hit a great card.
Yeah, like you said, we're going through the royalty and there's, you know, nothing, you know, there's some cool cards and low numbered cards. And then finally we get to the final card. You know, I'm sitting there like this, you know, you
we like do it really dramatically.
Do it. Yeah. So you can see, and I'm like, all right, well, it says RC,
it's
which
a rookie
means
card.
Rookie card. And then I look at the bottom and I can see the number. It's numbered at 10, 5 of 10. So there's only 10
in
prints
in the world
of that card.
Yeah.
And we got the 5th edition. And then I keep going and I can see it's a patch. So it's basically a patch of his jersey.
Game used.
And then I'm like, okay, it's a rookie card out of 10. I can see the colors on the jersey. I see it's a Spurs logo. Yeah. I'm like, it's Wemby. And then
I see you do it. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? And you stood up and you go, you're not going to believe it. Yeah. And I go, it's a Wemby.
And then I opened it. It was a Wemby. And yeah, we're going insane.
So we got what number is it?
5 of 10.
5 of 10. Was it a triple?
Triple color. So it's a white, black, gray, just a, like the side of his jersey. It's like game used jersey.
And what's it like? $2,000 probably?
Probably more than that now with the season he's
having. If
it
had an autograph, oh my Lord.
If it was an auto,
that would
probably be a $5,000 card probably.
And my best card is probably, I've got a couple. I have a Caitlin Clark I bought when she was a senior at Iowa at Shields. It was out of 100. It was out of 99.
Autograph.
And it's an autograph Bowman. And that's like a couple grand.
Probably
and I paid like 200
probably
at the time.
The $1,500 card.
And what makes me so mad is they had like 10 of them sitting there like $200. And I thought, well, I'll bite the bullet and buy one. You know, it's Caitlin Clark. She's pretty good. And, you know, and then the rest is history. And then Seth had a LeBron game used jersey rookie card that's numbered. I have that. But yeah, it's kind of fun. For me, I'll speak for me and maybe you feel the same way. Maybe you don't, I don't know. But for me, it's like really good father son bonding time because you don't golf competitively anymore. And that was the one place you and I could really spend a lot of, well, you probably it was stressful, but for me, you know, being a golf dad or a sports dad has its moments where it's insanity. You know, we take a lot of, we feel your pain when you miss a putt. We feel it too.
Yeah.
But for some reason, the sports card has brought us back together. And I look forward to doing those and sharing those moments with you. And anyway, it's just kind of fun to, I think the moral of the story is that when you're grieving or suffering or you're having, taking life a little too serious, maybe having a healthy distraction like that.
Expensive.
Can be, but you know, the difference between like going to the casino and betting on football games, that I consider that expensive because there's never any, there's never any tangible thing when you gamble because you end up just gambling it back.
Yeah.
With cards, you go buy a $300 or $400
They're
box.
Investment pieces. Some of our investment
Worst case, you're going to probably get half your money back. I mean, worst case.
Yeah.
You know, more than likely some of these higher end boxes, you know, you can break even or even get a really good card.
Yeah. There's like a, like I said, there's a 2018, or I think it's 2018. So Luka Doncic, his rookie year. There's like a, I think it's called like an Immaculate box or something like that. It's like a $20,000 box. But if you pull a Luka Doncic rookie, that's like an $80,000 card. So
I mean,
obviously you get that chance, but you know, who knows if it's actually in there, but there's obviously, so that rookie class is still really good, but just to, you know, spend that much money and, you know, who do you know is in, even
well,
in
then
there.
There's also just another talk about synchronicities. Getting a 101 is really hard.
Yeah.
Like it's basically, it's the one card, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So think of the odds here. So obviously you're good friends with Chris and Keegan Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And I have like hundreds of Chris and Keegan cards autographed and all that. And I don't have any 101s of them. And you go to Cooley's a few months ago and you buy a box and tell them what happened. And this is absolutely, if you need the odds of Chris, of all the rookie cards out there in the world, all the different, you know, boxes that are out there.
Yeah. Everywhere.
And then at just at Cooley's, there was probably a dozen.
I think they had like five or six of them.
Yeah. And so tell what happened.
But yeah. It was like a 2024 motif box or something like that, and then I just went and bought it and was ripping it. It's only like eight cards, like five guaranteed autos, so that's a low chance again. And I was ripping it, and then get to the final card, and I'm like, oh shoot, I pulled the Chris Murray
autograph,
rookie auto. I'm like, oh, that's pretty dope. And then I look a little closer, and it says one of one.
Unbelievable!
So I
pulled
odds. The only one ever of that card and that existence is a one of one Chris Murray.
That's insane. That's statistically, not just Iowa, not just someone that knew him, but one of his best friends. Yeah. And you sent a picture.
I texted him and he goes, oh, I remember signing that back before summer league or whatever. And it's what are the possible chances?
That's why I said the universe has a weird way of like, you know, helping you out when you need it. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I mean,
Covered sports, covered obviously what happened in our family. What's your long-term aspirations? Let's say bigger than like Tribute Kicks. I mean, what do you want to do down the road, big picture wise? What are some of your big goals?
I don't know. Yeah, I haven't really thought that far ahead, honestly.
Well, you told me you'd kind of like to get back to play more golf.
Yeah, obviously playing a lot more golf. Maybe do something with golf related in the future.
You want to share a little announcement you have that hasn't been shared yet? But
with what?
The golf team?
Oh, I mean, you can just wait. That's fine.
You're not going to be head coach.
That's not yet.
Well, no, it's exciting.
Yeah.
You're going to be given back
there's
a little
bit. There's some other thing that I got to complete before then. But like I said, want to do something golf related. You know, I love the sport. I would go play every day for the rest of my life if I could. You know, I love it. Love playing just with my buddies or, you know, by myself. You know, that was
my
therapy.
On the way down about that group you're in.
Yeah.
And you were sharing like So what are the top five courses that you have actually played? Doesn't have to be competition, just courses you've played, the top five.
Oh, my God.
Now, mine would be like Twin Pines, Airport National, Pleasant Valley. No, what are your top five?
I don't know. I mean,
it's a pretty good list.
Yeah. I mean, East Lake's up there.
East Lake.
The tournament championship is every year. That's obviously one of the most famous courses in the world. I mean, I just had to put the whole Abandoned Dunes, resort.
In college.
That was a college tournament.
Because you played at South Dakota.
Yeah. Yep. So it's like that course is, you know, U.S. Open. All these huge tournaments have been out there on the coast of Oregon. One of the most beautiful courses I've ever been to. If not, my most favorite. Goodness. Pinehurst is up there.
Number two.
Yep. And we played like 2, 7, and 10. I think we played a couple courses out there. Wingfoot, that's another one on my list. Obviously, you know, I have a video of me on hole 18.
It's the greatest video of your golf I've ever seen in my life. They ate the hole that Phil doubled.
Phil made that thing a double or triple.
US collapsed. Open to lose it.
Collapsed in the US Open and lost it. I had probably, I mean, how far is it? 50 feet?
At 60 least. 60 feet? At least.
And, you know, there's a couple tiered green and I'm kind of down way below.
And we had caddies.
Yeah. The caddies like throw it, you know, way above the hole.
Past the hole.
Past the hole.
Yep.
And have it come back and basically come back like a boomerang thing. And yeah, he's like, just throw it right here.
And I filmed it.
And I threw it all the way up there and it went up and went up, came all the way down and went in. I
mean, it was great. Last hole. That was during the tour when we went around the country. Yeah.
Yeah. Wingfoot's obviously very memorable up there because, you know, that course is just so exclusive.
PGA National where the Honda Classics played. PGA National is
another one. I was going to say Hazeltine.
Yeah.
That's another one on my list. Yep. That's another U.S. Open course up there. Ryder Cup, too. They're having the Ryder Cup up there. And I think next time it comes over here, it's going to be a Hazeltine.
Okay.
Played there because one of my teammates' dad is a member out there. And he invited me, one of my other buddies, up there and played. And, you know, that was just insane. That's
so
insane course.
Other than me, who's the most fun person or most, you know, the best golfer you played with?
Oh, geez. I mean, Ricky Fowler is definitely on my list. You know,
now
because,
tell how you played with Ricky.
I say because of my donating through high school, I have TaylorMade get a full custom set of TaylorMade clubs, like the newest ones, whatever that was that year, or play with Ricky Fowler
at his
down
club
in Florida,
Jupiter. Pretty easy choice.
Yeah, at the time it was pretty tough because I was like, I kind of need
not
a
for
club,
me. Yeah, you can always get clubs. Yeah. You can't always play with Ricky.
Yeah, but got the opportunity to play with him, and
that was fun. I remember that day.
That was amazing.
And your mom, Prudence, went with us, and we got to walk nine holes and see you and like I don't know, six or seven other kids. Yeah. Play nine holes with Ricky on his course, and he was very gracious. And that was through the AJGA, the Leadership Links program, which was, again, a great platform for you to raise money through high school golf.
Yeah.
And then you end up winning the Jerry Cole Sportsmanship Award, which is equivalent to the Payne Stewart Award for junior golf.
Yeah.
Which, again, just I still sit back and think of how golf was such an important part of our life. And even in the book I wrote after Seth died, I think five chapters I dedicated to golf. And so you played with Ricky and then you also got to play with who else?
I played with Zach Johnson.
Twice, right?
Once at Elmcrest.
Yeah.
So I met him and played with him.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, I was pretty nervous.
With Zach or Ricky or both?
Probably both. I mean, obviously playing in front of a professional PGA winner on the tour.
Now, Zach knew you because he narrated the documentary that CBS Sports did. So there is a 9-minute documentary on the internet. Just type in Ian Johnston, CBS Sports. And I mentioned earlier that they came out to the house, I think your junior year.
Yeah.
Because they were messing around the internet looking for just inspiring stories of young athletes. And I think Cody Goodwin at the Register had a big article and somehow that got flagged. Well, then, what was his name? Brent Burson? Remember?
I think Brent Burson.
Blake Burson, I think it was.
I think something like that.
He contacted me and said, hey, we'd like to come out and just do a story on you guys. They came out for like 3 days.
Yeah.
They filmed it all. And then I was just talking to Blake and I said, you know, we're from Zach Johnson's hometown. We'll remember Elmcrest. I know Larry Glatson pretty well. Mm-hmm. And maybe I could reach out and maybe you could reach out to Zach and see if he'd want to participate. I'm sure if he knew about your family's history, he would. And we have a picture in our house of when Zach won the Masters the next year he came back to the club. It's Prudence and Seth and you and me and Zach.
Yeah.
And so I don't remember if Larry set this up or somebody. Long story short, it just happened to be that Zach was in New Jersey playing in, I don't remember the name of the tournament. It's in my book.
Yeah.
It was in New Jersey.
Out there, yeah.
And Blake is from New Jersey.
Yeah.
And Blake said, well, I'll just reach out to his agent. And as it turned out, and this is just Zach Johnson again, didn't know us from anybody. He, the night before a tournament, allowed Blake to come into the hotel. They went up to Zach's floor and Zach narrated. So they played the video and then Zach narrated it. So, and again, I'm just pinching myself going, you know, how amazing can some of these athletes be when they do something like that? Didn't ask for anything. He wasn't paid.
Yep.
He did it. And then as fate would have it last year at the John Deere, Keegan got to play with Zach And Zach came running over and saying hi to you.
Yeah, I was just walking down, you know, I think it was hole 12. And then I was walking with my wife, Sipsy, and he goes, easy to see out. He's like, Ian.
Ian.
And I'm like, oh, wait. Like, he's.
No, your friends are like, wait a minute. You know, Zach.
I was like, wait. And then, yeah, walked around and he like gave me a hug. And he's like,
yeah.
He's like, oh, I heard you got married. Like, how's all that? How you doing? How's this? I'm just like, you know, it's really cool that, you know, he took the time out of that, you know, during a practice round of a, you know, tournament to come, you know.
Yeah.
Talk to me and stuff. And, you know, I meant a lot to, you know, both of us.
Well, that's where I keep telling you and your brother is that Seth and Prudence live on and they live through all of us. And for anybody that's lost a loved one, you know, this will probably be playing into next year, but the holidays can be really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And they are for me. I'm not going to lie. But they are for a lot of people, millions and millions of people lose spouses and grandparents and pets. And it doesn't have to be a son or a wife or a mom. It could be any loss. And just what gets me through is obviously family. You know, dad's still around and my brothers and you guys. And, you know, I'm a widowed 59-year-old, but my house has 5 pets, you and Sipsy and Roman living at my house. So we have love and...
Yeah, the zoo.
It's a zoo. I feel like it was back when you guys were little. So certainly not looking for any pity or sympathy, but you know, there's a story to be told. There's a lesson to be learned in everybody's chaos. And you know, I'm just grateful to have this opportunity to have this conversation with you and real proud of the young men you and Roman have become and the inspiration to other young people that you have modeled yourself after and keep reminding yourself to do good when you do good.
Mm-hmm.
I think is admirable. Anything you want to end with or any words of wisdom going into 2026? I mean, let me ask you this question. What would be, like, I had a word for 2025, okay? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what my word was.
Yeah.
This gives you time to think about your word. So my word was innocence in 2025.
Okay.
And what I wanted to do is go back to the young Jeff, the 6-year-old Jeff, and kind of have a heart full of learning and curiosity. And, you know, you get to be older and you start getting rigid. You do the same things. You eat the same lunches. You go to the same places for coffee. I'm like telling myself, you know, I want to be innocent. I want to start challenging myself. So got a couple really cool tattoos last year. I did quite a bit with psychedelic assisted therapy, which I, you know, had no interest in. Did some more advocacy work that things I, you know, started an app, which, you know, again, you know, drove me crazy for a while. But so going into 2026, if there was a word or a set of words or a phrase, what would you want your word to be?
Gosh, I don't know. I guess the first word that came to mind for me would just be happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, try to find happiness in things that you like to do. You know, with me, it's obviously, you know, my store. I love shoes. I love that. You know, I like, you know, very happy with all that stuff. You know, I'm just trying to find happiness in golf, you know, maybe not so much as the competitive side, but maybe just, like I said, playing as much as I can. Like with cards and stuff, you know, I found a lot of happiness in there because, you know, like I said, I unlocked that memory with Seth and I with Pokemon and then now me and you with sports cards and all that stuff. I feel like that'd probably just be the word, just try to find happiness in things, especially, you know, because this year is very tough for a lot of people.
Yeah. And you and Sipsy added to the family.
Yeah. A new dog.
Not what you think.
A new dog. His name's Bunker. He's about 3.5 months old.
What kind of dog?
2 months. Black Lab.
Yeah.
Black Lab.
I got scars. He likes to bite.
He loves to bite.
Still
That's
chews.
My finger. So.
So our pets are Birdie.
Yep.
Shanks.
So we have Birdie.
Which is my cat.
So Birdie's the new kitten who we got last year. Then we have, Shanks. Is his cat. Ryder Cup. Yep, after the Ryder Cup, which we've had him since 2016. We actually got him because Seth passed away and we wanted to, you know, add something to the house.
Bunker.
We got Bunker and then Bogey. So
all golf related.
All golf related. Yep, names.
Yeah.
Five
well,
pets.
I appreciate you coming in. This has been fun. Like I said, just really proud of you and I've learned a lot from you guys. And you've witnessed a lot. I think when I say 2025 was a tough year, that's an understatement. You know, you know what I'm talking about. We had some really, really hard moments during this last year that tested all of our resolve and our strength. And going to the well and seeing the well like dry and then having to tap it and get more energy from it is hard to do.
Yeah.
But you do that enough times and you have life throw enough curveballs at you, you get some scar tissue. And actually scar tissue isn't bad because it makes you more resilient.
Yeah. 100%.
And I was telling you on the way down, because right, like particular today is a really good day. You know, we've had a couple really good news on the Brighton front, some big investors closed some big deals. You guys having some good sales at the store. And I kind of told you on the way down, you know, I'm real grateful. This morning I woke up and I did like a 15-minute gratitude practice, just sitting in bed, just thinking of all the things I'm grateful for. Instead of waking up fearing the day ahead of me, I was grateful. But I also said on the way down, remember that can change real quickly. You're always one phone call away.
Yeah.
At your best moments in your life, that phone can ring and it can change like that. And that understanding of how fragile or how impermanent things are, they can just change on a whim, should make us all really appreciate what we do have.
Yeah.
And not necessarily get captured in thought on the things that we don't have anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so easy. I think someone once said that like 90% of your thoughts in a given day are ruminating over things that have already happened or worrying about things that haven't happened.
Yeah.
So you spend all day long in this beautiful moment we have. Just
worrying about yesterday and tomorrow.
We're just in the studio here having a great conversation. And it's hard to do that for a long period of time because we start thinking about the past and we worry about the future. Mm-hmm. And so you're living in two periods of time that don't exist.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's the challenge we have as humans, is to pull ourselves back and to be going into holidays, going into the new year, and being just grateful that you wake up each day and you have a chance to have an argument with someone. You have a chance to have a bad moment. You have a chance to get a bad phone call. People that aren't here don't have that chance. I was talking with someone the other day and they were talking about all the problems they're having with their family, fights with their kids and fights with their spouse. And I didn't say this, but I'm thinking in my head, I'd give anything to have the worst fight with Seth.
Mm-hmm.
I'd give anything to have the worst moment with my wife. I can't even have that. And that made me realize to be real appreciative of the tough moments in my life, because I get a chance to suffer.
Yeah.
People that are dead don't have that opportunity. So when you're having a hard time, just remember there are many people that aren't here that would switch with you in a heartbeat to have the worst moment that you're having in your life right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think I've learned through losing Seth and Prudence, is to become a lot more humbled as I get older, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not easy. It's going to be a long fight, but fortunately I got an unbelievable group of people that are supportive of our family. And I can't list them all here, but if you're watching this and you know how much you mean, I was telling you way down how much I really want to, at some point, repay. And I don't mean like with a check. I mean, just give back to the people that when I was at death's door, literally people that did things for me that I didn't ask, you know, and it's just like the way you pay people back is you do it to other people. You pay it forward, you know, an act of kindness, little tiny things. Like the day, what was that, over the holidays last year, where this old lady was lost. Remember that?
Oh yeah. I do remember that. And then we told her.
Yeah, she was lost, obviously lost. Yeah. She was trying to get to the doctor, and we were going to lunch, you and me and Sipsy.
Yep.
And we were at Lindale.
Yep.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And we could have easily just said, oh, go down here, go down here, go down here, and then went back into 8. And I said, no, Ian, I don't think she's going to understand our instructions.
No clue.
I said, here's the deal, ma'am. My son and I will follow us. We'll drive you the mile.
Yeah.
And we did it.
Yeah.
And she never would have made it.
Oh, gosh.
But when we got back to dinner, I told you, I said, didn't that make you feel good? It took, what, 5 minutes of our day?
Yeah.
But most people wouldn't have done that because it would have involved extra effort. But these are the little things you learn about giving it back. And, you know, I could see like our mom sitting there in a car. When she passed, she was having cognitive problems and I could see her having the same issue. And I thought to myself, that could be anybody's mom, you know?
Yeah.
And my heart went out to her. But again, you learn these lessons through life's adversities. But all right, man, I'm done. Appreciate it.
You good?
Love you.
Yeah.
Bye.